Welcome to Solder Smoke, where we talk about all things electronic and geeky. We meet on Echolink and swap ideas related to workbench radio projects. If you have any questions about this podcast or suggestions for future casts, send a note to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. Our webpage is www.geocities.com/soldersmoke. As always, have fun, melt solder, and pass along your ideas. So let's get started.
All right, KL7R, KL7R. On the Mendenhall Glacier, 10 miles from downtown Juneau. This is M0HBR in central London. Mark, Mike.
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Wow, we got stuff going on. I got the soldering iron hot here, and I'm building, I don't know if you've seen it, W7ZOI, Wes Hayward, and Bob Larkin, W7PUA. This is a simple RF power measurement. I'm building a little nano watt meter that was on the CD of experimental methods. I made a monster order, I made an order to a number of places, and one of the places I was Analog Devices, and I got me a free sample of an AD8307, which is the guts of that little thing, and so I was fixing to solder it in there, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. All right, Mike, I hope I'm not interrupting the solder smoke process there, or the generation of solder smoke. But you're getting hardcore. You're homebrewing test gear. It's just one step away from, I guess, from homebrewing your own transistors. But well, it sounds like a neat project, and glad to run into you here. I've been looking during the week, but I imagine you've been busy melting solder. I don't have really too many things to report from the workbench, other than the fact that we're at the far opposite end of the radio technology spectrum, Mike. I've been playing with crystal radios again, and because my 8-year-old son expressed an interest in the whole thing, so we pulled out a piece of wood and on a breadboard started building up a little crystal radio. We weren't able to get it working. I don't think I have the right. I think I need a different kind of diode in there. I have a silicon diode, and I think the threshold voltage is a bit too high. But we didn't have too much with that. But I noticed that if I hooked up my my signal generator to the diode and turned it into a mixer, put it this way. I didn't have any success with it as a standard crystal radio, but I made a very rudimentary direct conversion receiver out of the thing. And if I swept the signal generator past the AM broadcast band, I could hear a few stations very faintly in there. I had to zero beat though. And so that's the only thing to report from the workbench. But a few other minor technical advances. I finally got myself a Gmail account, Google Mail. It looks interesting. I'm sure you're aware of it, but I've had trouble. I needed to get somebody to invite me in, and I found a colleague who could do that. So now I'm part of the club. I'm part of the Gmail community. I'm not changing my email address quite yet, so you can still reach me at the old address, but I have a Gmail account, and I feel part of the elite now. Let's see. Yeah, we got some good feedback, and I'll say hi to Doug KB1 BJF out there in St. Kitts, listening into Solder Smoke. Really appreciate the feedback, Doug. And we got another email from our friend Brad of WA5PSA in Tulsa. Again, really appreciate the feedback, and thanks for the email. So back to you, Mike, KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. If you hear me dropping out, type me a bunch of messages there so I see it. I'll keep my eye on the thing. Fine on the crystal radio. need a bit of an antenna, I imagine, there to pick anything up. Might be fun to build a little RF amp and just see if it helps. Really cool. Find on the Gmail. Yeah, my son gave me a Gmail invite, but I never took him up on it. I've been kind of a fan of Yahoo and never really took him up on the Gmail. I may have to do that. I got three or four email accounts as it is already. Let's see. What else going on? News. I listened to the club meeting from the AMQRP club. They had it on an MP3, and they kind of streamed the club meeting, and it was really interesting to listen to. They had news that they probably won't have the Homebrew Brewer Mag anymore. Guys really busy, and what else? News that they were working on a complete software-defined radio. Basically, using their that kit, their antenna analyzer. They're basically modifying their antenna analyzer with another board and turning it into an HF radio. And they're changing the form factor of their antenna analyzer so that it looks more like a radio. And that's pretty interesting. They have a new DDS-60 synthesizer. I ordered one of them. And they had a bunch of stuff going on. All pretty interesting stuff. I talked to N2APB and asked him if they had any more pickle boards, the pick Elmer boards. And he said that they weren't going to do that anymore, and that Kanga was going to pick that up. So that's all the QRP news I've heard. And there's a new version of Audacity out that has a bunch of features that might be helpful to us. So. I really like this watt meter, and I do enjoy building my own test gear. The simpler the better, but I kind of enjoy that. I don't know why. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. I missed one thing you said there, Mike. My cold interrupted the audio stream there. You know what I mean? But what did they say about the Homebrewer magazine? They're having trouble getting that out, or they're gonna what's happening with that? I missed that bit. I get the CDs from them, I guess quarterly. But what was the news on that? Go ahead.
He was saying that N2APB got a job. I think it was with Symantec or McAfee. I think it was McAfee, the virus guys, and he's gonna be like their lead. Engineer, lead scientific officer, lead science officer, I think is what he said. And he said he just was thinking around of, he needed to pay attention to that. He was looking around for things that he could cut back on, and the homebrewer came to mind. He was actually looking around for an editor. Somebody felt so inclined. And nobody seemed to take him up there in the club meeting. I suppose if he sent him a note saying he wanted to be an editor, he'd find work for you to do. But he was thinking about letting that slide for a while, and maybe actually just letting it drop. Guys asked him about that. Over.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Guys have to. I'm sure there'll be a lot of complaints about that, but the guy's got to give his job priority. And it's all volunteer stuff. I mean, I remember there was a lot of complaining when they went from paper to the CD-ROM. But, I mean, folks sometimes forget that it's all just, it's just hobby stuff. So I'm glad he got the job, and I hope it works out for him. I enjoy getting the CD-ROM. I'm not, I kind of prefer the paper, but anyway, I guess it's a whole lot easier for me to put it on the CD-ROM and end up with a 500-page document every time they put one out, so I guess it's got its advantages. Speaking about paper, I've been reading, I think I told you last time, I've been reading this book about the Mars rovers. It's called Roving Mars by Stephen Squires. He's the principal investigator on the project that sent the two rovers to Mars. And from the ham radio geek perspective, it's a It's a fun book. I really like it. It started out kind of slow because the beginning was kind of a description of NASA bureaucratic struggles. But once you got into the description of how they built these things and then how they use them on Mars, really, really amazing. One thing I just wanted to mention that I thought was really neat, that, you know, it's all, of course, solar panels, solar powered. And when they're just below the Martian equator. So when they started going into winter, one of the tactics that they came up with to increase the amount of solar power that they were going to generate was that they would try to find hills that were sloping to the north, just so that they could, as they work and as they park these things, have them configured with the best possible angle to the sun. So I really thought that was kind of cool. I guess I was particularly interested in that because it kind of matches up with my efforts with my solar panels here. I think I told you I have my two Volkswagen solar panels suction cupped to the window here in the shack. And the UK-style windows open up like doors. And I have a very crude Armstrong-based solar tracking method. And that is, I just change the angle of the window to try to keep it following the sun. And I managed to generate enough solar power, even in dark, wintry London, to trickle charge my gel cell battery that I got from All Electronics. So as I was reading about the rovers there, I thought about my solar project. I thought that was kind of cool. Let's move it back to you, KL7R in Juno, M0HBR, London.
Squire's book is, it really gives you a sense of how they use the instruments that they put on there, the instruments that they designed and built to really do science and explore and look for water. So you get a real good, you get a real sense of exploration with this book that sometimes you don't get from the books that describe the robotic missions, but I really like it. You know, the other thing cool about it now is Mars is very, very visible in the evening sky now. So sometimes as I'm walking home from work, I'm reading the book. I read it at lunchtime sometimes. And then a few hours later, I'm walking home from work through London. And even from central London, it's very apparent. You look up and there's Mars. It's pretty close to us right now. Every 2 years it gets close, and we're at that point now. So Mars is bright. I haven't looked at it in my little telescope here. I remember on previous close passes, even with my little 4.5-inch reflector, I could see the polar ice caps
That was pretty cool. Yeah, and they are still running. And just before we talked, I went to their webpage, and they show you where they're going. They've actually just completed one Martian year, which is two of our years on there. I think they were supposed to go for a maximum of about 90 days. And Squire's books describes how they were, as they approached the 90-day point, they thought they were going to really be, they had to plan as if they were, the end of the mission was upon them. And I don't think any of them had really any idea that they were going to last as long as they did. But what happened was, and I just learned this from the webpage, that the big factor that was going to limit them was dust on the solar panels. And they knew that there'd be an accumulation of dust, and that would eventually cut into the power budget, and eventually the things would just kind of just die from lack of energy. But when the spring came around, the winds came, and they had these dust devils, these little kind of mini tornadoes that came by, and the wind and I think the dust devils would kind of just scoop off all the dust and just blow it off. So the dust got blown off, and they were back in business. Amazing stuff. But they even described, and this is really interesting, I think, from the homebrewer's perspective, how they troubleshoot these things and can actually repair not just software problems, but even repair physical, mechanical, electrical problems from a distance. For example, they have one motor that was going kind of bad, and they just they thought it through, and they realized that by heating it up and running it at high speed, they could get the lubricant in the motor better distributed and take care of some of the problems that they were having with it. So, can you imagine that? They're actually repairing motors on Mars. Great stuff. Anyway, yeah, this is the kind of thing that appeals to people who have workbenches and build things and generate solder smoke. KL7R, M0HPR.
Oh, Roger. I remember they had some problem there up there with their software or firmware, and they were getting hard power resets every minute or two, something like that, and I remember them thinking about it, and then they sent up some new microcode and basically, you know, reprogrammed the thing, bootloaders, and just completely reprogrammed it, and pretty frightening thing to push the inner key on code like that, because you make a mistake and it won't come back. But they fixed it and it's working great. I know they had one leg that was dragging there for a while. They were dragging one of the rear tires along. And maybe that's what you're talking about. They found out that they had to back it up. Well, not too much going on here. Like I say, I got a monster order in. I ordered from Mauser and from DigiKey and from Ocean State, and I got my K1 in. I ordered a K1. I got it in. I got my order in from DigiKey, and half of the parts that I ordered, I screwed up on, and I got surface mount. So I wanted to do a bunch of PIC programming, and all the small PICs are surface mount, so I'm gonna have to use get out the magnifying glass there and figure out some way to mount them on regular dip pins. Maybe I'll have to finally figure out how to make a printed circuit board. I've never etched a circuit board, so I may have to try that and see if I can make an etched circuit board. Mount the tiny chips on the edge circuit board, and then mount the edge circuit board in a regular dip socket. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, Juno, M0HBR, London. Yeah. Well, I know what you mean about getting the surprise when you get surface mount components. I ordered some NE602 chips one time. And I think I knew when I ordered them that they were surface mount, but they get kind of hard to get, so some guy was selling them on eBay or something. I said, okay, and I bought them. And I figured, well, they can't be that small. Wrong. They really are. Those things are tiny. I just recently started having to use those cheapo reading glasses that they sell at the checkout counter at pharmacies, Mike. So I've got the kind of half glasses on the end of my nose now when I'm homebrewing. A sure sign that the home brewer is getting older. So if I'm having trouble with regular components, I think I should leave the surface mount stuff to the younger generation. On circuit boards, you know, when I first started homebrewing, I kind of got the idea that you had to etch circuit boards. So I've in the beginning I etched a whole lot of boards, and you know, I have the stains on my the green stains on my clothing to prove it. I guess that's how you could tell a true home brewer. He's got burns from the soldering iron on his fingers. He's got kind of green stains on the on his clothing from the etchant. And I think if you use quite a bit of etchant, your fingers change colors too. Well, looking at mine, and apparently no permanent damage was done. But these are the signs of a true home brewer. But then I stopped etching the boards, and I went completely Manhattan, or ugly and Manhattan combination. One of the reasons is I think for certain circuits, the Manhattan method is just gives a better ground plane. Not only that, it's much, much easier to fiddle with circuits and debug them and stuff when everything's up on the top. It's a real pain in the neck when you have the board and you have to take the board off whatever that it's mounted on, and you know, desolder the pin of the other side, and then after a while the pad gets too hot, it falls off. It's Manhattan. I just really, once I got into Manhattan, I just said, this is it. I'm staying with Manhattan. Although I guess there are times when you would need an etched board. My method of etching was really pretty simple too. It's none of this fancy stuff that a lot of the guys are using to produce really, really nice looking boards. I was into the kind of pieces of electrical tape on the board, and then dunk the whole thing in the Radio Shack etchant, stir, clean, remove tape, that kind of thing. That was fun. I just wanted to mention a couple of things I spotted on the web that may be of interest to you and to our listeners. This guy Farhan from India, I'm sure you've seen his stuff. He's got he's a young, very talented designer from India. Has come up with a design for a radio. He's called the BitX 20. It's the Bit stands for, I think it's bilateral, and it's a real simple 20 meter SSB transceiver, and he designed it so that it could be built with parts that are readily available from old televisions and junk and other stuff like that that is available in India. But it's real interesting because it's got a whole bunch of circuits in it that work, that the input and the outputs are kind of bilateral. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry too much about switching, and you can use a lot of the mixers and the amps, both for transmit and receive. And it works out real nice. But they've got a Yahoo Groups going there. It's called BitX20, BITX20, on Yahoo Groups. I think if you did a search, you'd find them real easy. And he's got a real neat clip there, too. He was interviewed by CNN, and he talks a little bit about ham radio and its role in technological innovation. The other thing that's kind of neat I spotted was on Rec Radio Amateur Homebrew on the Usenet group. There's a long thread there now, about 135 messages, I think, on unusual uses for electronic components. And it was just a discussion of somebody asked the question of, tell us about how you've used one electronic component for a purpose other than that which was designed for, and it generates some interesting discussion. So I think you get a kick out of it. If you get a chance, take a look at Rec Radio Amateur Homebrew. I check it every once in a while. It's a shame there's not more discussion there, but when there is, it's usually very good. KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, I hadn't heard of the BitX20 KL7R back, But I did see that Rec Radio Homebrew on the unusual uses for electronic components. There's so much information there on weird uses of transistors and diodes. I don't know about you know, hot carrier and barrier and all that strange stuff they were talking about. It was all pretty interesting. I did understand though, using a surface mount resistor as an igniter for a rocket engine. I thought that was pretty smart there. Over.
Yeah, you see, that's the kind of thing that we all appreciate. Things, you know, news that you could use, you know, stuff that you need to know. I just, on the Echolink text box, I just sent you the URL for the BitX 20. But, of course, folks who are listening to us on their iPods on boats off St. Kitts or while jogging in Tulsa won't be able to see it. But it's just http://groups.yahoo.com/group/BitX20, BITX20. But I think if you did just a search Yahoo BitX20, you'd find it. It's a neat site, and there's a community of folks out there who are building these things. Real simple little rigs, very neat, and I am really tempted to build one. Maybe one of these days. It'd be fun to build one, just to be able to talk to these guys about the technical problems. It's always fun when you're working on something like this, that there's a bunch of people around the world who are also working on it. I'm sure you know what I mean. The rover. I think Squire's book was written, as it turns out, relatively early in the mission. I guess he thought it was near the end, but the thing lasted so long. He did such a good job on it that it lasted longer. And I just noticed on the webpage this morning a bit about the wheel. When Squires was writing the book, they were going through the process of heating up the motor to distribute the lubricant so it would work better. But I think eventually it went bad on them, and they discovered that if they turned the thing around, they could and they just dragged it. It worked better that way, so they just started driving in reverse. But these things have gone like three or four miles on Mars from the landing sites, and it's really neat. And if you go to the NASA website, if you just do rovers, the Mars rovers, and they'll take you to the NASA website on this thing. They give you maps and show you where they've gone, all that kind of stuff. So I really got a kick out of that. Oh yeah, you mentioned my antenna on the crystal radios. I hooked it up to the 40 meter antenna I have up on the roof, but I'm still not getting a whole lot of RF. And I think one of the things that I don't think they have the real high power, you know, 50,000 watt clear channel AM radio stations like we have in the States. So it might make it a little bit tougher here. Plus, I'm in an RF challenged environment. I'm here in central London, and I've got big tall buildings all around me. So it's not quite as favorable as environment as the as you'd have elsewhere. I even tried the Galena crystal thing, and that was even so. I might get a germanium crystal and try that and see if that works a little bit better. But we'll get it going. These are the kind of things, you know, with receivers, you have to coax them into working. That's what I always find. You build a receiver, and then you have to little by little kind of poke at it until the signal strength builds up to an acceptable level. I think that's where I am with this thing. I definitely have the LC circuit though working in the broadcast band range, so that's a first step. And I have high impedance headphones too, which is of course essential. KL7R, M0HBR.
I have to use a powered op amp, and it's it's not crystal then. You want it to be all passive. Well, I think I'll get back to working on this here power meter. Take a look at it. It's in the back of on the CD-ROM, an experimental methods book. It's by W7ZOI, and it's really simple. His son, Roger Hayward, has a modification to it that uses a huge PIC chip and a digital display, and that's so I ordered enough parts to make one of them too. So I'll see how that turns out. That one's a little more complicated, and I don't know if I've got the gear to make it. But this one I have the gear, and so I'm looking forward to making this thing play. I'll say 73, Bill, and catch you next time. M0HBR, 73 for tonight. Have a good morning. KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. But, yeah, good talking to you. The high-impedance headphones, I buy them every time. I have a bit of a collection because every time I spot one at a ham fest, I just buy them. And I have one here that the guy claimed was used at Bletchley Park, which was, of course, the signal intercept operation during World War II. I don't know if he's just pulling my leg or not, but they look like they're of appropriate vintage. So, all right, listen, good talking to you. Glad we generated some additional solder smoke this morning. Good luck with the project there. And, hey, listen, I want to ask again, anybody out there is listening, please send us an email. We're really interested in feedback. Send it to m2cqr@arrl.net. And let's do this, Michael. Let's run a little contest. Anybody, we'll say the first 10, let's not get ambitious. The first 5 email that we get on feedback from Solder Smoke, we'll get a free preview of a homebrew magazine article, a magazine article on homebrew stuff that will soon appear in a let's put it this way, in a ham radio publication somewhere in the world. So if that does, there you go. There's the offer. So that, you get a free preview for the first 5. The first 5 people who send us some feedback will get a free preview of this soon to be published article. I don't think the publishers will complain if I have it. We'll say it's peer review. It'll be peer reviewed by the first 5 emailers. How's that? So get those emails into us. Again, m2cqr@arrl.net. Okay, Mike. 73. Have a good evening and good luck there with the project. KL7R and Bill HBR.
Well, hopefully you don't have to work too long, and get back to playing at the workbench. Talk to you next time. I'll probably be on once again this weekend or so. So if you swing by, I'll see you then. M0HBR, KL7R.